Technically, it was actually 18 individual domes, but because they were merged, it was hard to tell where one ended and another began. The surface hadn't been cleaned in 7 years, and was now stained in filthy, near-opaque shades of brown and yellow. It was largely accidental that some areas of the dome remained clean enough to reveal the city beneath them. From the behemoth it looked almost normal, a phenomenal mass of immensely tall buildings compressed into festering urban density, like a glimpse into the innards of a fantastically complex machine. But there was something queasily wrong about those buildings, something sick about their shapes, contorted into forms no sane architect would have chosen. Above ground, they branched and rebranched, merging into a single bronchial mass. Except for a sprinkling of lights at their upper level and lower extremities, strewn through the bronchial mass like lanterns, the buildings were dark and dead-looking. "Well, you know what this means," I said.
"What?"
They weren't kidding. It wasn't a hoax.
"No," Quirrenbach said, "they most certainly weren't. I also foolishly allowed myself to entertain that possibility, thinking that even after what had become of the Rust Belt, even after the evidence I had seen with my own eyes, the city itself might be intact, a reclusive hermit hoarding its riches away from the curious."
"But there's still a city," I said. "There are still people down there. Still some kind of society."
"Just not quite the one we were expecting."
We skimmed low over the dome. The structure was a sagging geodesic drapery of latticed metal and structural diamond, stretching for kilometers, as far into the brown core of the atmosphere as it was possible to see. Tiny teams of suited repair workers were dotted across the dome like ants, their labors revealed by the intermittent sparks of welding torches. Here and there I saw gouts of gray vapor streaming from cracks in the dome, internal air freezing as it hit Yellowstone's atmosphere, high above the crater's thermal trap. The buildings below reached almost to the underside of the dome itself, groping up like arthritic fingers. Black strands stretched between those painfully swollen and crooked digits. For all the world, like the last tracery of gloves which had rotted almost away. Lights were clumped near the tips of those fingers, reaching in long meandering filaments along the thickest webs which bridged them. Now that we were closer, I saw that there was a finer tracery altogether, the buildings enveloped in a convoluted tangle of fine, dark filaments, as if delirious spiders had tried to fashion webs between them. What they had produced was an incoherent mass of dangling threads, lights moving through it along drunken trajectories. I remembered what the welcome message aboard the Strelnikov had told me about the melding plague. The transformations had been extraordinarily rapid. So rapid, in fact, that the shifting buildings had killed a great many people in ways far cruder than the plague itself would have done. The buildings had been engineered to repair themselves and reshape themselves, according to architectural whims imposed by democratic will, the populace having only to wish a building to alter its shape in sufficient numbers for the building to obey. But the changes wrought by the plague had been uncontrolled and sudden, more like a series of abrupt seismic shifts. That was the hidden danger of a city so utopian in its fluidity that it would be reshaped time and again, frozen and melted and refrozen like an ice sculpture. No one had told the city that there were people living within it who might be crushed once it began to shape itself. Many of the dead were still down there, entombed in the monstrous structures which now filled the city. Then Chasm City was no longer beneath us, but the toothed edge of the crater wall.